everyone. This is Luke Jean-Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're in for a treat because we have a guest. Her name is Tina Larson. And so I'm very excited to have her here. She was referred to me by a friend and fellow podcaster. She is the co-founder of the Folsom Group, and she is the a co-op and condo board consultant, and she specializes in cutting costs for groups and organizations like these. And she guarantees results, which is amazing. Not many people do that, so which I think is very wonderful. So we're very happy to hear you, to have you come on board and hear what you have to say. So can you, I guess, starting off, can you talk to us about your background and how you first gravitated towards doing what you do today?
Yes. So thank you so much, Luke, for having me. And I'm so excited to be here for your inaugural second season. Very exciting.
My background
is from finance. I come from a finance background where I have been a business analyst analyzing companies for the sole purpose of investing our clients' money when my partner got elected to his board, to his co-op board. And because of my analytical background, he and the new board asked me if I could look at their financial statements and see if I can find any savings. So what I did was that I went through all the financial statements and the expenses for the building. And when I did that, I went like, well, I don't know if $10,000 or even $1 million for a particular service is high, low, or average. So I did what I knew from finance, which was I went to neighboring buildings and got there and pretended to be a buyer. Don't tell any of your real estate friends. And what I did was I got the financial statements for those buildings too. And then I put together a benchmark. So I have all of these data points for all of these buildings. And then I could find out which ones were high and low and average for the building that my partner is on the board of.
Right.
And in doing so, I made some phone calls. We eliminated some services that were paid for twice with two different service providers. And on my recommendations, the board was able to save $340,000.
Wow.
So after that, what happened was that when I was out networking for my finance business, nobody wants to talk with a financial advisor, or everybody has one already, right?
Yeah.
So what I did was I said, well, I helped this co-op save $340,000, and you would never have believed it, but almost everyone said to me, can I introduce you to my co-op board? And that's how we started a Folsom Group.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's my background.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an amazing story. It's interesting how you started off in finance. And you had that analytical mind, right? And it was almost, it started off by chance. It's interesting how. Yeah.
Yes. It was a complete accident. If you asked me 10 years ago, we would have said, what are you kidding me? But here we are.
Yeah.
So we started a business, and that building under my partner's, he's still the board president, and they have not increased maintenance for 8 out of 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, based on those savings and additional savings after that. Yeah, unbelievable.
That's amazing. So, and you were able to save this organization $340,000, which is a lot of money, even with the inflation we're having going through now, that's still quite a bit. And so I think that's just amazing. Now, it's interesting how I noticed from your story that you went out to get benchmarks because you weren't sure.
Mm-hmm.
So when you
when you had an issue, you found a way to solve it. You didn't give up. You said, you know, you had a plan. You went in disguise, right, as a
yes.
potential buyer.
Buyer.
To find out the numbers and to get the data that you needed. And that must have been fun, I'm sure. And so, and then you were able to go back and figure out what you needed to do to cut costs. And here we are with the Folsom Group. And it's interesting. Obviously, you've been doing this now for quite a while, for some time now. And I'm curious, what is the current state of co-ops and condos right now, you know, with the boards and stuff? And what challenges has the pandemic caused, if any?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And this state, well, let me start with the pandemic question. So when it came to the pandemic, the biggest challenge are in the buildings that have a commercial space on the first floor. So all the buildings that are residential buildings from floor up to and up,
mm-hmm.
but they have a commercial tenant, meaning a CVS, the Chase is fine because they're still there, but all of these little mom and pop stores who closed, or the restaurants
right.
who closed, and that really created a lot of problems for the building, because either the way that it works is that the residential portion either has someone else who gets the income, who owns that and gets the income from that.
Right.
And then they are in problems. But many buildings, they actually own that space. And if they own that space, then they lost income. And so there was that portion. And then it was the portion of a lot of residents, they did not pay their maintenance charges, their monthly dues.
Right.
And I mean, we have some buildings where everybody paid and it was not a problem, but we have also heard of buildings where they did have problems with people not being able to pay their maintenance. And of course that creates problems and interruptions because they count on everybody paying.
Right, obviously. And I imagine it must have been tough for a lot of landlords and real estate investors with tenants who weren't able to pay. And so, but fortunately, there were buildings where people did, you know, shell out the monthly dues, which is so important. But it's, you know, I think it's terrific that all these restaurants and all these other businesses closed, and you think about all the loss of jobs and whatnot. And so it's, but obviously we're coming out of this pandemic, and I think we're sort of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, which is great.
Yeah.
I'm curious, where do you see things in the future, and where do you see yourself in that future?
Yeah, so where we see things in the future for our industry is that because buildings are old and getting older and older, there are so many accidents. And there are so many issues, safety concerns that the laws are becoming more and more stringent when it comes to building codes.
Mm-hmm.
And that really creates a lot of new laws and new restrictions, new inspections, new devices that have to be installed, new there's a new energy code of New York City where New York City has a goal of being carbon neutral and eliminating fossil fuels, which is a very good thing, but who's
right.
going to pay for it all? So it's really, it used to be the boards didn't really have to be very active because the buildings were not that old and they didn't need as much upgrades, but we're seeing for the last 20 years that rules are becoming more and more stringent and buildings really have to be very active and boards have to be very active and do a lot of upgrades, and it's very costly and it's going to crunch them and they're going to need all the help that they can get. And that's kind of how we see that we fit into the mix.
Okay. That's amazing. So it's interesting because obviously in business you have to have a crystal ball, and so important. It's like chess. You have to think two steps ahead. You're saying that the laws obviously, right, will be more stringent because the buildings are getting older, accidents are becoming more common, and that boards have to become more active, more proactive in terms of repairs,
yeah,
fixing things,
mm-hmm,
and whatnot. And,
mm-hmm,
and obviously because of climate change, the way we do energy has to, of course, change. So there's got to be a lot of upgrades, a lot of different things have to be done. And so there'll definitely be a strong need for your services in the future, of course, as businesses spend more. Right.
Yeah, that's how we are seeing it. And it used to be that the property manager did what they did and they handled all the needs of the building. But
mm-hmm,
they don't have enough resources, so our boards are going to need us, and rental property owners too. Yeah.
Okay. And then the rental property owners, so not just the co-op and condo boards.
Yes.
So.
Yes, we work with rental property owners too, but they're not as easy to get to. Asking for a co-op and condo board, it's easy because 30% of the people in New York, they live in a co-op or a condo. They own an apartment. And so they all know who their board members are, or
right,
at least one board member because they're neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
The rental, if we meet the other 30% of New Yorkers who rent, they have no
right
idea who owns their building. So they can't introduce us to the property owner in most cases. So therefore, it's not a good ask for us. So therefore, we normally just ask for co-op and fund a board member.
I totally understand that. I'm learning so much new stuff from you. You said 30% of New Yorkers own their where they live in terms of condos, co-ops.
Yeah.
That's a high amount, but definitely I believe it, and particularly in a city like New York City. I'm curious now, obviously – you know, you saw a need, and as an entrepreneur, you made that leap to, you know, start your own business. So my hat is off to you. I think that's amazing and whatnot. And, of course, I'm thinking to myself, obviously, some boards may think to themselves, well, why should I bring someone like Tina on? Why can't I just do this myself? You know, why can't I look and cut my own costs, so to speak? I mean, you know, I mean, what would you say to those folks?
And we say, yes, you can. But if we can, so what we do is there are approximately 150 line items, expense line items that goes into running a building. And that's before any project.
Mm-hmm.
So just the ongoing operating expenses. So if they want, they can try. We have done this now for many years, and we know what the outcome should be.
Right.
So if they're currently, let's say that they pay $100,000 for their insurance, and they have however many apartments they have. Let's say that they have 100 apartments. We know that they should be paying. So it's kind of like we have this. Remember when you went to school? It's always so much easier to solve the problem if you can look in the back of the book and see the answer, right?
Right.
Yes. So
absolutely,
we have the answer. They don't know if $100,000 is expensive or cheap or normal. We do. So it's much easier to have that leverage of negotiating when you know what it should be.
Right.
But
absolutely.
Could they go through all the 150 line items and make phone calls? Absolutely, they could. And we give away on LinkedIn, we give away, and on our website, we give away free tips all the time. But for a board member who has a full-time job, a family, hopefully they have some hobbies, and then they have to do some podcasts, for them to fit into their schedule to call 150 different vendors when there's nobody even who can give them the name and the phone number to the vendors, it's probably not so easy.
Right.
So they can do that. And as I said, on our website, there are tons of tips, and they can start there. But we really provide additional value. And then when it comes to all of these different new building codes, it's really going to be too much for them to plan all of these different projects. So we have the facade needs to be inspected and repaired every 5 years.
Right.
And now we have the gas line inspections because of the gas line accidents and explosions.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to inspect that every year, or every 5 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Starting this year, now you have to inspect all parking garages. So any building with a parking garage, they need to start, and that is in addition too. And then they have a leak on the roof that they've had there for 10 years and they can't get anyone to fix it, or they've tried for 10 years and they still have problems. And then on top of all of this, we have stricter fire codes because of the devastating and the horrible accident that happened in the Bronx not too long in January.
Right. Yeah.
And then we have the structural issues because the accidents, the collapse of those buildings in Florida created a lot of extra buildings have to be more careful in actually doing something about the structure. So there's all of these layers of new codes, elevator accidents, elevator codes have changed. So for them to fit calling 150 phone calls and then working on all these different projects, it just becomes very overwhelming. And that's where we come in. Yeah.
So that's amazing. Ooh. So it's interesting. You guys have that specialized knowledge, and mm-hmm. it continues to become specialized because obviously when it comes to any profession, you're always learning. Things are always changing. Laws are always being, you know, amended, repealed, created.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can stay on top of all this. And
mm-hmm.
so that, and so people are paying you for that, obviously that specialized knowledge, you know, like mm-hmm. they would pay a plumber, they would pay a TV repairman or whatnot. And so obviously, you know, there are people who can do it themselves, but, you know, when you're busy, you know, it's better to pay someone else to do it. Cause you know, there's two types of currency. There's money and there's time. And so they could spend money on it or they could spend time on it, right? And time is more valuable than money. So obviously delegating this to someone else makes perfect sense. And you mentioned the 150 line items. Where would they even begin, right? So overwhelming. They don't know what's actually expensive, what figure is inexpensive. And this is all knowledge that you have. And it's interesting.
Yes.
You mentioned that you give out a lot of information. And some people in your profession and other professions, they're very wary about giving out a lot of free information because they think it hurts them. But I'm always amazed when people do give out information. And there should be no fear of this because, you know, you're not trying to market yourself to the do-it-yourselfers, right? You're trying to market yourself to the people who don't want to do it themselves, who don't want to spend the time but rather spend the money. So I think that, that fear that people have of giving out free information – it's so overblown, and I'm sure you agree. So
I completely agree with that.
Yes.
And one of the things is that they can tell us that we don't want you to work on phone lines because we are in the process of calling Verizon and renegotiating all of our phone lines, and that's fine. Mm. Then we won't work on phone lines. That's fine.
Right. Okay, so that's amazing. So you can specialize and work on this or work on that, and they can handle other stuff. So that's, I think, very critical and important and whatnot. And
we were just hired by one building where we started doing our review, and then they said, oh, actually, a few months ago, we hired an energy efficiency consultant who's going to work on reducing how much fossil fuel we use, and we're like, okay, so we won't work on that. That's fine. We'll work on everything else, and they can work on that. That's fine. That works. Yeah.
So that's great that you guys have that kind of flexibility and whatnot, and so and that you can offer to clients. And so I think that's amazing. Now, I'm curious. Now, obviously, there's a market for what you offer out there, particularly in New York City, so many co-ops, so many condos, and people who are smart enough to know that they can't do everything themselves. They don't have enough time, right, because they're busy. And so obviously, when people see an opportunity, they grab it. You did, right? And but there are probably others who probably think the same way as you and probably started their own firm and became a consultant or whatnot. And I'm sure there's probably several others out there who can help condos and co-op boards. So I'm curious, what exactly is your competitive advantage as a firm, and how do you guys stand out?
Okay. So our competitive advantage is that we take a holistic – well, it's two ways. One of them is that we take a holistic approach and look at every single expense that goes into looking at the building. There are other – we have competitors, especially when it comes to energy. So there are lots of energy consultants. Some consultants, they work similar to us, but most of them, they sell one service. So let's say that there's one device that you can install that reduces the energy use by 20%. Well, we have no reason to sell that particular one. What we will do is, and we're not resellers, we're strict consultants, but what we will do is we will say, well, we have this device that reduces it by 20%, and then we have this particular item that we can do, and then we have this policy that we can say, and all in all, that reduces your energy use by 50%.
Wow.
So, yes. So it's not only one thing. We have many different devices and many different policies and many different solutions, and it adds up to much more than just selling one device. The second thing is that we work on contingency. We share our clients' savings. So even if the energy auditor who sells this one device, they charge an upfront fee for the device and their time, and then they may save 20%, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want them to save 50% because the more they save, the more money we make.
Oh,
so
wow.
We will roll out, yes, we will roll out all the different available options that are out there that we know of so that we can help them save as much as possible. And most vendors, they don't operate like that. And what happens is that then they try to upsell. We don't try to upsell. We try to reverse sell. We try to reduce how much they pay. I mean, that's bottom line. Yeah, so those are the two ways. There are other competitors who do very specialized. There are lighting designers who put in the motion sensors and the new light fixtures. There are other consultants who do other items for buildings. There are telecom consultants who specialize in working on telecom, but there's no other vendor, to our knowledge, who take a holistic approach and who look at all the systems that go into running a building.
Amazing. So thank you so much for that. You gave me a better understanding of what you guys do and what the kind of how the industry operates. So I'm learning so much from you. I was actually thinking myself of I haven't made a decision yet of buying a condo or co-op. So I don't know if I'm going to do that or if I'm just going to rent an apartment. So somewhere else, but so I'm learning so much from you because I also live
Thank
in New York
you.
City, so we're fellow New Yorkers, and so I'm curious now. Obviously, you said you guys follow a holistic approach. You look at all the 150 line items, and you know obviously mm-hmm. the savings add up because you were able to get $340,000. I can't mm-hmm. I can't get that figure out of my mind. That's a lot of money, which I think is incredible because it adds up when you save here, save a little there, save a little there. You know, now you're talking real money, right? And mm-hmm. so I just find it amazing. And you have so many people out there that just do that one service. You guys are holistic. You're not resellers, but you also mentioned
that you guys work off contingency. And I was trying to understand it while you were speaking. And so you don't upsell, right? You make more as they save more. And I think that's an honest way to do it. And I think people appreciate that. And I think when you do it that way, you know, obviously you get more referrals and whatnot, and which is I think, you know, when you do right by the customer, they're going to tell you all, you know, tell all their friends about you. When you do wrong by them, they won't do that. In fact, you might suffer and get, you know, negative word of mouth from that. So I'm curious. Now, obviously, you've been doing this for some time, and you live in, you know, you're doing this in New York City. Can you tell us any of the most moving or entertaining stories from your career?
The most moving or entertaining stories from
my
career.
It could be from your career or your life in general. It's fun, you know.
Entertaining. Oh, I had lots of entertaining.
All right.
Let me tell you about the exterminating service. So, in one of our clients' buildings, the one of the residents, he was complaining that they have pests.
Right.
Turns out that he's the only one in the whole building who has pests.
Okay.
Turns out that he somehow his kids are organic, or he's organic, or something very organic. So he refuses the exterminator to come to use poison, right?
Right?
I mean, that's how they kill pests, is by poison.
Yes.
So and that industry, the exterminating service industry, is very, very strict, because they don't want to give, I mean, they don't want to poison anyone. So it's very, very strict there. It's only certain products that are allowed. But this tenant did not allow them in. So, and they were having this problem for a long, long time, and the board kept on telling us that it was so problematic for them. And then they went on vacation or something, and the super, he happened to drop some tracking powder, and all the mice disappeared. Yeah, so that was a good one. But we have lots of interesting stories. We had one scaffolding guy who sent us a picture. So they're putting up a big scaffolding, right? And one of the ladies, she looked outside and she saw the scaffolding. She took a picture of a post-it note that was stapled to the staff scaffolding and sent it to us and said, please remove the post-it note.
Really?
Yeah. She didn't care about scaffolding, but she did care about the post-it note.
That's very odd. Maybe not too surprising in New York City, because it is what it is. And obviously, the exterminator story was interesting to me and funny, because New York City, of course, like a lot of big cities, does have a lot of, you know, has a pest rodent problem. And the super putting the powder all of a sudden when the guy's away.
the problem disappeared.
Yes. And just like that. And so, you know, sometimes you have to wait for the opportunity, and then you take it and you grab it. And so I think that's the moral I take from that story. Every story I try to learn something from. So I'm curious now, obviously you've been doing a great job for a lot of people, and you're out there promoting yourself, obviously being a guest on podcasts and whatnot. And which I think is great. And So you were sent to me as a referral from a friend who's a podcaster. And So I'm curious now, you know, they say when people are trying to sell anything, it's great to get to a point where you mostly or solely rely on referrals, right? And it makes your job a whole lot easier. And so it's so important to get referrals from customers, but also to network and whatnot and meet as many people as you can and tell as many people as you can what you do. And I'm curious, what advice would you give to folks when it comes to networking and getting referrals?
Yes. So networking is an interesting phenomenon. And I, both myself and my partner, we've been networking for, over 10 years. And in the beginning, I used to not know how to network, but I figured it out pretty quickly. I have belonged to a BNI group for many years, and my partner belongs to a BNI group. And networking, it's all about getting to know, like, and trust the people that you network with, and to be generous, be nice, smile, follow up. You don't get anything from showing up at the networking event and handing out business cards or trying to sell anyone. You get something out of a networking event by meeting people that you like, following up with the people that you like, and then getting to know them. And then over time, you build trust. And after you build trust, then you can start referring business to each other. And that is really, I mean, generosity, as BNI says, it's giver's gain. And it really is. Networking has been fantastic. And we refer solely on referrals, on networking for our referrals. Yeah.
Wonderful. That's amazing. And, you know, it's interesting. I think you described the best way to network perfectly. And so many people do it, shall I say, imperfectly. And so it's so important to build a relationship with people. It's not about selling right away, straight away. It's about building a relationship, getting to that point where people know, like, and trust you, and you know, like, and trust them in reverse. And BNI is a great group, too. And and you've been doing networking for 10 years, and I think you've harvested the fruit and whatnot. And and now you're sowing, or, you know, you reap the harvest and you're sowing the gains. So I think that's amazing. So I think you mentioned that you basically get most of your clients from referrals. That's incredible.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is incredible.
And yes, it is. And we network a lot. I mean, we many, many years ago, I think it was like before I started networking, so it's 12 years ago or something, I went to a seminar, and it was the owner who owned, I don't know if you're familiar with a restaurant called Akvavit. It's a Swedish, I'm Swedish, by the way. I should have told you that in the beginning, which is why I have an accent. But the owner of Akvavit, he held a seminar of some sort at the Swedish American Chamber, and I listened and I asked him, "What's your advice to being as successful as you are?" Because he's an entrepreneur, he has tons of businesses, and he said, "You should read a book, Never Eat Alone." And I read a book, and I said, "Okay, we're gonna stop eating at home and watching TV. We're gonna go out and network. That's it." And
wow,
we've been networking ever since. Yeah,
that's amazing.
I just read. Thank you. Can I? I don't know if you know this. So, do you know Joe Apfelbaum? He's my LinkedIn coach. He just wrote a book. Is it okay if I promote
sure.
it?
Yeah, of course.
So
Absolutely.
He and I started networking approximately at the same time, and the way that he felt about networking in the beginning was the same as I felt. I had a pit in my stomach, and I was nervous, and I didn't know what to do because I'm not a salesperson, and I was terrified. And he wrote a book called High Energy Networking. His name is Joe Apfelbaum. He is amazing. And I read his networking book, and it is such a good book that I really highly recommend it to anyone who wants to learn how to network correctly, or to not correctly, but to get the most out of networking is how I should put it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And just so you know, you can't go wrong with name dropping an author and giving out a book recommendation on this show. I'm all about reading books, and definitely going to check
oh,
out
nice.
That book. With the High Energy Networking.
High Energy Networking.
All right. Yep. Well, I'm definitely going to take a look at that. Yes.
Available on Amazon. Yeah.
Oh,
I think all books. Aren't all books available on Amazon nowadays?
Yes, absolutely. There's only a rare few exceptions, but we won't go into those, I promise. There's a reason why they're not. But and you're also in BNI, which I think is an amazing organization. And so obviously you're getting the hang of this networking thing and doing it correctly and whatnot. And also I've heard of the book, definitely am familiar with Never Eat Alone. Love that book. And, you know, that book it just tells you the truth about success. That, you know, I always tell people the number one key to success is two words, other people, or one word, just people.
Yes.
And I always tell that to people, and I can go on and on about it, but I won't because you're the one being interviewed, of course. I don't want to be doing too much talking. But obviously, we've been talking a lot about networking, business, what you do for business and whatnot. And I'm curious, you know, obviously, there's a lot of social ills in our society and whatnot that we're still, you know, battling and trying to overcome today. And one of them is sexism and whatnot. I just wanted to know, have you ever had to deal with sexism? And if so, can you talk about it? You know, how did you overcome it if you had to deal with it?
So I haven't experienced sexism in my journey. I am very supportive of anyone who had that experience, and I strongly feel for them, and I'm very sympathetic to it, but I have not personally experienced any discrimination in my journey.
Okay. That's great to hear. That's wonderful. And, you know, obviously I think that this is a country where no matter who you are, no matter what you are, no matter what you look like, if you work very hard, you can accomplish success. I truly believe that, no matter what your background is. And whether one does
so
deal
do
with, right, you know, racism or sexism or not. So, you know, so I think, and also your story is just incredible, and I think it's inspiring to women as well as men. That, you know, you are of an immigrant background, right? You're not from the United States, right? You're originally from Sweden. And I love a successful immigrant story because I'm the son of immigrants. While I was born and raised in New York City, my parents are from Haiti. And and so I'm very happy to be an American. I'm very happy that they came to this country, the land of opportunity, you know, where I could start a podcast and have people all over the world listen to it. And meet all these incredible, successful people by living in the capital of the world, New York City, that I could, you know, interview and whatnot. And so I'm so blessed. And, you know, and I'm always so happy to hear when people come here and they've achieved the kind of success that you've achieved and continue to achieve, of course. So I'm curious, you know, you obviously have made that leap of faith as an entrepreneur. And but it's not easy for business owners, for people who go out on their own. You know, most businesses tend to fail within the first couple of years. And, you know, but in that failure, people can learn from it and succeed afterwards, of course. But I just wanted to know if you could just give people advice, particularly on people who want to start their own business, but who particularly want to start the kind of business you have or want to do what you do. I mean, what would you tell them? Yeah, what kind of tips and advice would you give people who want to be a consultant, for co-ops or condos, or any kind of consultant for firms? Mm-hmm. You know, what would you tell folks?
I would tell them that the most important part is to have a good strategy. Do some market research. We did some market research before we started the business, but do a lot of research before you start. And if you have a full-time job, you can do it on the side. You can learn all of these different things at the same time as you set your company up. But I started hiring coaches way too late because I always thought that I was too busy and I never had time to hire coaches. So I actually when they shut New York down or the country down 2 years ago, that's when I hired a coach. And then that coach told me I needed to be more active on LinkedIn, so I hired a LinkedIn coach. The LinkedIn coach told me that I had to be more on video, so then I joined a video course, and then I hired an improv coach. And then that led to, because I'm now so active on LinkedIn, everybody's telling me that I need to write. I write so much that they're telling me that I need to write the books. So now I'm writing a book. And someone said, with my first coach, she said, oh, you need to be on podcasts. So my goal this year is to be on 24 podcasts. So one of the things is that and personal branding you can do while you're still at your full-time job. So the whole planning, my advice would be that if you're planning on becoming an entrepreneur and have a full-time job, do it on the side so that you have a better strategy when you go out on your own. That would be my advice.
Right. And so just in case, you know, that job gives you a sense of security, right, with someone were to, something goes wrong or whatnot. And so you don't want to quit your job right away, right? You can still do this, you know, start on your free time and then leave the job when you're stable enough in terms of making money from that business, right? When that mm-hmm. money comes in. I'm curious now. And by the way, this was great advice. I loved it. You talked about the idea of doing research, doing your homework, having a good strategy. So many people start a business and they get excited and they don't do the grunt work of the research, and then that may lead or unfortunately contribute to the high failure rate. And so it's so important for people to do that research. I hear that advice all the time. And you also mentioned the idea of coaches, and I think coaching is so important. I've had many business coaches on my show as guests, and they get great results for their clients, not just business coaches, but also life coaches as well. And coaching is, I think, everyone needs a coach. I truly believe this, even if you're not a business owner or a life coach. And so many successful people have said coaching has taken them to stratospheric heights. And so I think coaching is something that people really need to look into. And so my understanding is you said that you had a LinkedIn coach, a video coach, and I didn't know they had all those types of coaches. Not surprised.
Me neither. Me neither. When I hired the first, she's a business coach, but part of her program is also a little life coaching, and it's marketing coaching, it's branding coaching. So it's a business coach, right? Mm-hmm. She's the one who said you need to be more active on LinkedIn. And I said, how do I do that? She said, I hire a LinkedIn coach. I'm like, they exist? I didn't know that. Yeah.
Wow.
And they exist? Yeah.
That's amazing.
There are lots of people, actually, now that I've been very active on LinkedIn for the last year and a half, a lot of coaches or a lot of LinkedIn-related specialty coaches that are available, like they have coaches that help you improve your LinkedIn profile or improve your strategy on LinkedIn, which is the one that I work with, or improve your content, or how to do it, how to use all the different LinkedIn tools, how to use DM,
right,
how to build it, how to network on LinkedIn. So there are a variety of really good coaches when it comes to LinkedIn. Yeah.
Wow. And so, and then definitely I'm going to be looking into this. I read a lot of books on LinkedIn, but sometimes coaching is, I think, more effective than reading books, because there's so many books out there, but people aren't implementing the information in them. And, a book, I think the thing is, a book can't really hold you accountable like a coach can. A book can't really give you direct feedback and specific tailored customized solutions. And, it's interesting because, I said before that the number one key to success I found is other people and, coaches, again. And then you talked about networking, right? Other people,
mm-hmm.
again, right? And so, of course, you're on a podcast where, lots of people listen to,
right? And so again, you're reaching audiences that are out there, so to promote yourself. And so I always tell people that people is the key to success. You know, more ways than one. So I definitely, you know, thank you so much for giving your advice. And I'm curious now, obviously as a consultant, you know, you're just one person or just two persons, or no matter how big your team is, there's only so many of you guys, right? And there's so much business out there. Let's say you're on vacation and you're not available, unfortunately, you know, and someone's looking for a consultant. They sit on a co-op board or they own a rental property and they want to cut costs. And, you know, they can go to you, which I think, which would be an excellent decision. But let's say you're on vacation, you're exploring the world, right? Well, what advice would you give to someone who's looking for a consultant to work with on this matter?
So we have a huge network with other consultants, not that do exactly what we do. So number one, when I go on vacation, we're always available. So it's not like because we're available by email always. So we're always available. But what we do is that we will direct them to a consultant that we find appropriate. So we have people who call us all the time and they said, oh, we're thinking of installing a green roof. And if it's not the right size or not the right match for us, we will send them to someone who specializes in that. So, I mean, we always want people to call us first or contact us first, and then we will direct them to the appropriate. I just met someone last week who I've been networking for years, and she said, oh, she wanted to thank me for this one job in Hoboken, and that it was too small for us. And we gave them a referral, and they worked with them, and they worked out so well that she actually got enough that client that we referred to her, he referred her to a different job. So now they have several jobs from the same referral that we gave. So we always prefer that they contact us first, but if we're not available, then we will direct them to the right people that they need.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep. Sorry to interrupt you. And also because we take a holistic approach, we have all of the different solutions. So we will be able to direct them once we hear what it is that they need. We can direct them in the right direction.
Wow. And that's amazing. Yeah. You know, but first I have to commend you because you talked about answering and dealing with emails. You know, work emails, business emails while on vacation, which is not something everyone does, but I commend you for having working vacations. You know, I think that's, you know, something that's very noteworthy. And so I'm curious now. You're still on the job.
Well,
your way, you know.
Well, you can think about it this way, that either I can go on a 5-day vacation and not work and it's not a problem. And if I don't get back to someone for 5 days, right? And my partner is available too, of course. Or I can go for 2 weeks if I work. Which one would you rather do? Be away for 2 weeks or 5 days?
Well, when you put it that way, it makes sense then. And thank you for clarifying that. And so it's interesting, you know, it goes back to that what we were talking about before about networking. You know other people that you can refer them to and whatnot. And I always tell people that your network is your net worth. And definitely the key to success is other people. And just like the author of the book, Never Eat Alone, he talked about successful people knew other people. So critical. And with that holistic approach, you can tell people what they could, you know, you can diagnose the situation and tell them, you know, where to go. And you won't just work with anyone if they're not the right fit. You tell them that. And I think that clients and customers appreciate that kind of honesty. You're not that desperate to do anything and everything, even if, you know, even if it's the wrong fit, you know. So I think that integrity is so key, and it makes people know, like, and trust. And so when they, you know, with that trust there, they can send you referrals. And so I think that's so critical and so important. Now, you know, we've been talking a lot about networking and referrals, and, you know, I would love to help you out, and I'm sure people in the audience would love to help you out as well, particularly those who live in New York City. I'm curious, what would I have to hear from someone in order for me to refer them to you? And this is a question I give to everyone in networking. You know, I just want to know how I can help them.
Okay, how you can help. I want to meet co-op and condo board members, right? Who knows those? It is people who live in a co-op or a condo. So anyone who owns an apartment in New York City, I would like to speak with. So in New York, they can own a single family home or rent a single family home, which we do not work with them. We have nothing against them, but we don't work with them. If they live in an apartment, they can either rent or own, and if they own, that's who we want to meet.
Wonderful.
They can then introduce me or us to their board members.
Wow. And I think that's amazing. And obviously you're in the right place, because as you said before, 30% of people in New York live in apartments they own. And so there's a huge market here. So obviously you're in the right business, so to speak, New York, and I'm sure I'll probably run across people in New York City who own apartments. I can't think of anyone now, but when I do, and in the future when I do run into people like that, I'll definitely introduce them to you, of course, because I already know, like, and trust you already. So.
Thank you.
So, absolutely. So thank you so much for that, because I'm all about trying to help others. And that's a question people should give when they're networking as often as possible. You know, you always want to find out how you can help others and, you know, tell people, you know, what do I have to hear from someone to introduce them to you? I think it's a very important, critical question. I learned that from a book called Endless Referrals by Bob Berg, a great author, and he talks a lot about generosity, like that you mentioned, and the law of reciprocity and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And also Ivan Misner, I just want to throw him in there. He's the founder of BNI. He believes in this principle too. That's why they have Givers Gain as their slogan or whatnot. So. Mm-hmm. So I'm all about trying to help people as much as possible by getting them referrals. And you're the only one I know who does what you do. So it's a lot easier because, you know, when you know 10 real estate agents, it's tough, but I still try to send referrals when I can. So
yeah.
I'm curious now, obviously, you know, you started your own business. Before that, I believe you had studied or worked in finance and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And here you are with your own firm. What important life lessons have you learned or have you been, you know, by yourself or been told by others that you'd like to share with us?
So the life lessons that I have learned are that if I could just say to my younger 20-year-old self, I would have said you have to network. I mean, that's number one, have to network. I didn't get it. I thought that I could just do my career and sit in my desk. And I had friends, but I didn't realize the importance of networking. And networking has really changed my life. So that would be my number one life lesson. And surround yourself by good coaches. I mean, coaches will take you to a completely different level. They specialize in giving the right tools to get you where you want to be. So I have
Absolutely.
Two, I guess.
Yeah, but your two, I think, equals one because, you know, I always tell people the number one key to success is other people. And mm-hmm.
you know, surrounding yourself with coaches and mentors who can hold you accountable, give you direct feedback, tell you what you have to do, and then surrounding yourself with or knowing lots of people obviously opens you up to opportunities. And not just for business owners, you know, people looking for work who are unemployed or who may want a better job if they're already employed. The number one way to find a great job is networking. Most jobs are not advertised publicly, at least a lot of the good ones. And so there is something to this networking. And, you know, I think a lot of people need to understand that. And, you know, I could go on and on and on about it, but I'll just say one thing. I was reading a book by Richard Wiseman, and the book he studies luck. It's called The Luck Factor. And he found that the luckiest people had the widest networks, and that they were extroverts. And because they were extroverts, believe it or not, and because they knew so many people, they had so many opportunities available that they are aware of because they knew so many people. So there is something to this, you know. So that's why they were so lucky. It wasn't some magical, lucky charm, but they just knew a lot of people. That was one of the several factors that made them made the lucky people so lucky. Great book, by the way, highly recommend it. And while we're on the subject of books, you already mentioned one already, the high energy networking, which I'm definitely going to get. But I'm curious, what other book recommendations or author recommendations or rural recommendations would you like to provide us?
So I have a few that I read over and over and over again. And one of them is with John Maxwell, and it is called Thinking for a Change. And when I read that book, it made me train my brain to think differently, to think more positively, to think about goals, to think. So it was a really good book. But one book that I just reread that I'm also going to mention is The 10 Time Rule with Grant Cardone. It is absolutely fantastic. And he says in this book that you should be you should have omnipresence. You should be everywhere. So I live by this book. I read it last summer, and I am everywhere. I'm like, my husband tells me I'm like crabgrass. I am everywhere. I am on social media, and I am at networking events, and I have one-on-ones, and right now I'm on podcasts. Did I tell you? Or I can't remember if I forgot to tell you. So my goal this year is to be on 24 podcasts. So, yeah.
Wow.
Tries to be everywhere.
That's great. I've heard of, I'm obviously familiar with Grant Cardone, have read some of his books, particularly on sales and whatnot. Haven't gotten to 10X book. I heard of it, but since you recommended it so highly, I'm going to bump it up on my list of books, bump it up to, you know, in the top 5, top 10 of books I need to read right away. So thank you so much for that great recommendation. And John Maxwell, I'm familiar with. I love his book, Failing Forward. Definitely going to read. Thank you for saying. You love that one too, right? So,
That's a good one. Yeah.
So love John Maxwell. Definitely going to check that one out. And you mentioned that you reread books, which is so important. You can't just read a book once. You only truly understand the book the second time you read it. I always tell people that. It's the second time you read it that you really absorb it. And so books like these have to be read over and over and over again. And, you know, I like to highlight books. So if I go through a book, I can, you know, briefly go through the highlights and get the gist of it. It's very important for people to reread personal development books.
And I think that I saw John Maxwell, I think, twice or three times in person. And one of the things that he said was that he reads all of his personal personal development books. So he's the one who said you have to reread them, and I'm like, okay. If he says so.
Yeah. Maxwell, love Maxwell a whole lot. He's written a lot of books on leadership, which I think are amazing, absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the importance of doing, you know, the daily activities, you know, how today matters, and, you know, what you do today, every day adds up. So I love Max Watt. He's a great storyteller and whatnot. So an incredible writer. So definitely, thank you so much for those recommendations. And by the way, I love the goal of 24 podcasts. I can definitely help you not only attain that goal, but exceed it. So you're definitely, by knowing me, you'll be able to get way past 24 because I'll be introducing you to other podcasters. And so that's, you know, I will be connecting you to other podcasters, rest assured.
Wonderful, thank you.
You got it. And so now that leads to my next question. Are you ever going to have your own podcast?
It is possible, but right now I have my goal of speaking at 24 podcasts. I'm writing a book. I'm launching my LinkedIn newsletter next week. I am trying to get speaking engagements, so I'm working on that too. So I feel, and I'm working with three coaches. So I kind of feel that I'm a little overwhelmed right now. So it's not in my immediate future, but it is possible that I will have a podcast.
Well, just so you know, obviously when things slow down a little bit, or maybe I shouldn't say that so much, but or when you're ready, when the time comes, I think that I know you would be an excellent podcaster. I just want you to know that. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. And I think you have a lot to share and to teach folks. And, you know, so I believe you'd be a great podcaster. And when you're ready to do that, let me know. And because
Absolutely.
There's a, yeah, that you could actually start a podcast for free. There's a free platform called Anchor. And I always tell people about Anchor. And so just so you know, it doesn't cost any money to start a podcast. So and it doesn't even cost that much money to write a book either. But not a lot of people know that for some reason. So
I heard you promoting Anchor in your
yes.
intro, in the podcast intro. Yes.
Right. And so I not only in the intro, but I tell everyone personally, tell everyone I know that Anchor is a great way to do a podcast. I think everyone should have a podcast. It was Seth Godin, who's a marketing guru. You may have heard of Seth Godin. He's written many books on marketing.
Yes.
Like Purple
yep.
Cow and whatnot. He said that podcasting is like the new blogging and that everyone should have a podcast. So, and I wholeheartedly endorse that. If he says it, then you know it must be true. The man's a marketing genius. So definitely, I think you'd, and one of my questions was, if you were going to write a book, but you already mentioned that earlier on in the interview that you were going to write a book. Let me know when you do write that book. I'm going to definitely check it out and definitely be the first person in line to buy the book. Will the book be about condos and cost cutting, or will it be for like?
It's going to be about co-op and condo and cut costs, but it's also going to be about, and I haven't decided on the title, about not staying in a reactive mode, but being a proactive board. So it's, I haven't really figured it out yet, but it's basically don't just put out fires, but be proactive so that you know what systems need to be done when. So it's more like that, but it's going to be associated with co-op and condo boards. Yeah.
Okay. Somehow. Wonderful. Wonderful.
I'm assuming I'm going to talk about my background and how I ended up doing what I do, et cetera, also, but I'm not 100% sure how I'm going to.
Okay. Yeah, that's the book I'll definitely get. I'll definitely get, both books, this one about, you know, biography and the condo one. So amazing. And just so you know, obviously, if you can hold off on doing the podcast, as long as you're a guest, I just want to make that clear, because someone once told me that the true magic is when you're a guest on other people's podcasts. So I think you're doing it right. By being a guest first on podcasts before you even think about starting a podcast. So tip my hat off to you. Not a lot of people, not a lot of people understand the magic of being a podcast guest. You get a lot of bang for your buck when you do that. So I think you're definitely going about it the correct way. The coach who gave you that advice was spot on, and it helps you with your omnipresence, right?
Thank you. You're taking
absolutely.
Notes.
Yes. And, so I'm curious now, you have, mentioned a lot of things about your story and about what you do, and I've learned so much from you, and so has the audience and whatnot, and I hope to continue to stay in touch with you after this interview. Can you go ahead and just describe all the ways that people can reach out and connect with you and whatnot?
Yes, absolutely. So you can reach me. So our website is www.thefolsongroup.com, and that's thefolsongroup.com. I am on LinkedIn twice a day, so you can also reach out to me on LinkedIn, and my LinkedIn, it's Tina Larsson, that's one R and two S's, or my URL is TinaLarssonli, like in LinkedIn. Those are the two best places to reach me, and on my LinkedIn profile, I have all of my different ways of booking a meeting with me and calling me and emailing me, etc. Oh, we're also on Instagram, actually. It's the handle is FolsonGRP. That's FolsonG as in George, R as in R, P as in Peter. And I'm not as active on Instagram, but I do look occasionally.
Wonderful. Amazing. And thank you for sharing that information. Just so you know, all the information that you just shared with us will be in the show notes. So people will be able to not only hear what you just said during the interview in terms of your contact information, but they could also read it, see it and read it as well. So it will be there, including the link to your website and your LinkedIn profile and whatnot. And I can attest to the fact that you're active on LinkedIn. You sent me a LinkedIn connection request today, which I'm very thankful for, which I happily accepted. And definitely LinkedIn is a great place to be, particularly if someone's serious about networking. And I looked at your profile. Your profile looked amazing, looked excellent, looked great. I love the pictures and whatnot. And
thank you.
Yes, and the website I thought was very well done, and absolutely, yes.
So, thank you, appreciate that.
You got it, and all right. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to appear on this show as a guest. It's an honor to have you here. I know you're a very busy woman, so to carve out some time in your schedule to spend it with me, I'm very appreciative of. So thank you so much for that. And I'm sure the audience appreciates what you have to say, I'm sure at a very high level. And I'm curious now, obviously as we're wrapping up, do you want to leave us with any last word or final send-off?
I do. First of all, I want to say thank you so much for having me. This was great. It's a very nice conversation, very thought through podcast. I really enjoyed it. And I'm going to end with a quote. And the quote is by Clint Eastwood. Sometimes if you want to make things happen, you just have to go out and do it.
Wow. Actually, I love that quote. I love Clint Eastwood. And, that he's said a lot of quotable things. So I actually really do like that one and a lot, actually. So thank you so much for appearing on the show. I want to thank the audience for listening in. I'm going to catch you guys in the next episode. So everyone take care and have a wonderful, blessed life. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
You take care. Bye, Tina. Hey guys, before you go, just real quick,
If you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcasts app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. We can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that would be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.